Paper 16, section 2, which is old single column, page 185. All right, this is a good pair of sections, these next two sections to go together. We often seem to sort of just coincidentally stop in very apropos places. The seeming randomness of it all. And we're going to read about supremacy some tonight, so it's all very appropriate that we stopped where we did last week. You can see it's a pretty straightforward title. Let's just get into it. But one little thing, everyone, sort of get yourself ready for a little bit of thinking. When we get to the seventh master spirit in the next section, they give us some meatier material, but it's very important material. I'll try to sort of get you ramped up to it as we get started here.
2, relation to the infinite spirit. Just as the eternal and original Son is revealed through the persons of the constantly increasing number of divine sons, so is the infinite and divine spirit revealed through the channels of the seven master spirits and their associated spirit groups. At the center of centers, the infinite spirit is approachable, but not all who attain paradise are immediately able to discern his personality and differentiated presence. But all who attain the central universe can and do immediately commune with one of the seven master spirits, the one presiding over the super universe from which the newly arrived space pilgrim hails.
Okay, let's take this first paragraph just to get some precision juices flowing here. So, starts out pretty straightforward. You may notice that they use kind of a fun double naming there of saying eternal and original and infinite and divine rather than just infinite spirit and eternal son. You can reflect on a number of things relative to that, but just sort of in the immediate context, when you think about sons of the second source and center, just in a very direct way, you have the creator sons and the magisterial sons, sort of setting the Trinity teacher sons aside, because those are actually Trinity origin beings. So you have those two basic ones that are revealed to us. And when you're talking about a creator son, you're talking about a creator, and there's a very immediate connection to eternal. And original too. But for the magisterial sons, they're just a creature. You have less of that sort of immediacy of connectivity to that eternal existential fact. They're a little bit more of a in time sort of a being, because they're not a creator. So just that, can get you to think about the interplay between those two, using those two adjectives, both of those adjectives. And you notice that they say the seven master spirits and their associated spirit groups, so having infinite on the one hand and divine, associated spirit groups, you may not be talking about a creator again, but you certainly be talking about something divine. So just little things like that. To kind of get you thinking right away about, there's a lot of complexity going on. And, they start, and they continue with that theme. So they say, at the center of centers, the infinite spirit is approachable. And we've mentioned that here, I think, recently. Now, of course, that's, you're talking about approachable as a person, discovering the third source and center. As a personal fact, that effort that you're doing when you're in Havona. Remember how You know, you do the first two circuits, you know, the seventh and the sixth, and then you start on the Spirit, the Son, and the Father, and, you know, and actually going to paradise and attempting this personal recognition. And of course, it's a personal recognition. So, I mean, it's the infinite Spirit as the conjoint actor, okay, that you're really thinking of. But it's, you know, it's using that expression, conjoint actor, to indicate the personality of that infinite person, you know, which is kind of one of the reasons why they said infinite Spirit, to remind you that, you know, when the persons that are present, you know, how do you want to say that, the personal presence that exists on the aisle, you know, is the presence of the three infinite persons of deity. You know, as infinite persons, they actually are present there. Nowhere else. You know, it's only on the center of infinity that an infinite person can stand. Yeah. So, you know, you're attempting to actually make contact with that fully transcendent fact. I mean, obviously not in an infinite way, but, you know, so when they're saying at the center of centers, the infinite Spirit is there, you know, on the aisle. You know, okay, now notice, you know, what the main point is. Of course, you know, we're in this paper about the master spirits. And, you know, they told us right up front that you have these primary personalities of the infinite Spirit, these seven master spirits. And think about the example that they're pointing to. But all who attain the central universe, but not all who attain paradise are immediately able to discern his personality and differentiated presence. Well, maybe first of all, remember your first challenge is to differentiate the third person from the Paradise Trinity. And it's the differentiated part there. But okay, who's an example of an ascender that might come up against this? An ascender from the first super universe. An ascender from the first super universe, you know, occasionally, one of them won't be able to meet that challenge on the first try of finding the conjoint actor present there on the aisle. So, with that in mind, someone from the first super universe, so think about that. But that person, when he attains the central universe, can and does immediately commune with the master spirit from the first super universe. So, you know, here you have these primary direct expressions of the infinite Spirit, and you can, you know, and this ascender from the first super universe can find that first master spirit. They can't find the being this is supposedly a very direct primary expression of the infinite Spirit. So, just, you know, put the two together and think about it. So, okay, so what master spirit is that? That's the one that's where the deity is just the father type deity flavor. Okay? So, in other words, the father being the flavoring for that downstepped expression of the infinite spirit biases that expression far enough away from the source that there actually can be this differential, that this ascender can find one but not the other. To think of that, of the Father as being a bias, and a very strong bias, a biasing influence, an influence that would be taking you off a center of some sort, that's not a thought that's ever really been contemplated. You know, you always think of the Father as being this very centered fact, but here, see, they're trying to point out, no, in this instance, you know, you've got a center point, and the Father is biasing this expression quite a ways away, so far away that there's this differential, that this ascender can find one but not the other. So that's a very key point. Now, the other thing to notice in there is the word immediately. If you remember, when we were reading about the central universe, and they talk about sending pilgrims, landing on the pilot world of the seventh circuit and starting their journey, they talk about, you know, this long journey through the seventh circle of Avona and culminating in the personal recognition of your master spirit. Okay. But here, you know, you read it and it says, but all who attain the central universe can and do immediately commune. You know, you need to think really carefully about the word immediate. Don't, you know, there's this very strong tendency to kind of think of that word as a synonym for instantaneously, you know, or simultaneously with landing on the pilot world of the seventh circuit, boom, you have this personal recognition. That's not what it means. It's not a contradiction. You know, it's only a contradiction between here and back in the Central Universe paper if you misinterpret that word. Okay? Immediate, not mediate. In other words, you know, not there's nothing in the middle. There's you and there's your goal, personal recognition. And there's nothing in between you and that goal. It's just a clean shot. There's no mediate. Okay? So it immediately means it's nothing in the way. Okay. However, you know, that you notice they used immediately twice. You know, it says, but not all who attain paradise are immediately able to discern. See, that ascender from this first super universe, there's something in the middle. There's something in a roadblock, see, between him and the personal recognition, the conjoint actor. Okay. And what, you know, and to get that roadblock out, he needs some more experience. He doesn't have the experience for there to not be something blocking the path.
Yeah. Does he need more experience on the particular Havona circuit that embodies the master spirit?
No, it has nothing to do with the Havona circuit. Remember, that he has to go back out to a super universe that
really?
Will... Yeah.
They have to go that far out.
All right, they have to go out and get experience
at another super universe.
Because, you know, he has
embodies what he can't see.
He got everything that you can get out of the first super universe. Okay, he's got to go to something that'll help him with the third source and center. You know, like say maybe the third super universe or something.
Yeah, you can't graduate from your super until you complete it.
Right. So, you know, he's not missing anything from his super universe, and we're not talking about something that you can acquire in Havona. So, anyway, just point out all those little details, you know, that when you see that at the center of centers, the infinite spirit is approachable, you know, get yourself be thinking really precisely. So we're just talking about, you know, that infinite person of deity being engaged there. Out in the central universe itself, I can engage an absolute personality presence, but not the infinite personality presence. That's only engageable on the aisle. All right, but anyway, the real takeaway though is just that bias fact that is the Father, that this, you know, they're really wanting you to take away from that, to think of the Father as a bias influence rather than a centering influence.
In one place in the book, it talks about dimension. So I'm just thinking about how we have the Father, the Son, and the conjoint actor. Are these like different, like dimensions? Kind of like how they apply it in a sci-fi way, sort of way, where you can't see the conjoint actor if you're not in that dimension?
Not so much dimension, probably. I don't know if that's the best way to really think about it. The reason is you don't want the three persons to be orthogonal, you know, for them to be absolutely independent. I mean, they're definitely overlap with each other some. Okay, but it really is just a matter of, in order to be able to experience something, you have to have something in common with that. Otherwise, it's not experienceable. You know, to think very literally that if A is going to connect with B, A and B have to have something in common. If they don't have anything in common, they pass right through each other as if the two, you know, are in separate universes. So it's that ascender from the first super universe was missing a key component so that he could be, in that first minimal amount, in common with the third person. He couldn't bring himself into commonality with the third person as a person. Okay, and just reminding yourself of that. I mean, mindily, yeah, I'm sure there's all kinds of commonality. But personality, you know, is engaging that triunity. So the triunity fact, you know, the harmonization of individuality, associativity, and unity that is the third source and center, that ascender didn't have a like triunity. His personality couldn't envelop something that was like the third source and center. He's missing a key component to get the full harmony in place. So he's got to find that other component. Yep.
Is it like a vibrational resonance?
I mean, you know, that sort of crude analogy is often used just to, you know, you're looking for a resonance, you know, but don't think so simplistically as vibrational. I mean, that's a very materialistic notion. Doesn't matter how much mystics use the notion, it's extremely a materialistic thought, you know, thinking of some literal oscillation sort of a thing being synchronized.
Conceptual.
It's much more like I was just saying. You want, you need to be of like harmony. A vibration is just a single tone. It's not a harmony.
That's what
I was trying to get at there. It's a very complex harmony of all kinds of subtle tones and overtones and whatnot in it, and if you don't, if you can't attune to that harmony, you know, no matter how you turn your cranks to try to tune the piano that is you, you can't come into resonance, this harmony resonance with that third source and center.
Okay, so resonance works, but not vibration.
Try to take it up a notch, sort of, in what's coming into resonance. All right, let's get some more.
To the universe of universes, the Paradise Father speaks only through his Son, while he and his Son conjointly act only through the Infinite Spirit. Outside of Paradise and Havona, the Infinite Spirit speaks only by the voices of the seven Master Spirits.
Okay, you notice they italicize speak, so they probably want you to stop and think a little bit, just try to figure out what the subtlety is that they're getting at there. It starts out, it's like, oh, I know what they're talking about. That's the thought, word, action thing, the way it starts out there. And you know, we all know thinking of the Son as the word, you know, so that the Paradise Father speaks only through the word. The thought speaks through the word, and then the two together conjointly act. It's like, okay, I get that part. Outside of Paradise and Havona, the Infinite Spirit speaks only by the voices of the seven Master Spirits. Well, now, why? What about within the central universe? Remember what I was just saying? I mean, there's a voice of the third person, of the conjoint actor, in the central universe. The conjoint actor speaks directly there. But that's an absolute voice. Okay? To speak outside of there, you can't speak in an absolute voice, as it were, quote unquote. You have to speak in a sub-absolute voice. Who are the sub-absolute expressions of the third source and center? Seven master spirits. That's, you know, what we just, you know, how did the previous section end? It might embrace all or much that is ultimate, but not absolute. You know, and we kept stressing they're the sub-absolute expressions. So, see, that's the detail they want you to be, you know, getting clear in your head. It's like, okay, yeah, I have the absolute personality presence. I have the infinite personality presence on the paradise down in the central universe. I have the absolute personality voice speaking. But when it has to go sub-absolute, it can't be done directly by the conjoined actor. It has to be a downstep expression, the seven master spirits. So that's what they're getting at there.
The infinite spirit exerts an influence of personal presence within the confines of the Paradise Havana system. Elsewhere, his personal spirit presence is exerted by and through one of the seven master spirits. Therefore, is the super universe spirit presence of the third source and center on any world or in any individual conditioned by the unique nature of the supervisory master spirit of that segment of creation? Conversely, the combined lines of spirit force and intelligence pass inward to the third person of deity by way of the seven master spirits.
So it starts out just, you know, saying what I was just saying, repeating that. Again, that there is a personal presence, but it's absolute in the Paradise Havana system, in the central universe. And then notice the very logical, you know, mathematical-like construct at the end. So that you think of this very definitively. You have this bidirectional connectivity. It's a one master spirit per super universe and one super universe per master spirit. There's no overlap. They're completely distinct. Yeah, the conversely thing. They're trying to get you, you know, to see this as this, you know, if and only if. There's this very distinct pairing, you know, and there's not overlap. And that's, you know, going to come up in the next section. But that's the whole point of that, is just to stress that. It's one thing to say that, you know, a particular master spirit, you know, oversees this, but, you know, maybe he does a little bit over here too. It's like, no, if you take everything that's happening here and trace it back, it doesn't go to other master spirits. It only comes back to the one. It's just, a totally separate connectivity. No overlap. No crosstalk.
But it does go through the mothers, the seven, the reflective mother spirits. There are six of those down there, and then there's...
Right. But and that's part of the reason. You know, once you know that fact, that's also a reason why they're stressing this here. Don't think that because you have seven reflective mother spirits in each one, that all seven master spirits are directing, you know, in each super universe. That's what the point they're trying to make. You know, it's not the way it works. In terms of the spirit womb, that's encompassing a particular super universe, it's only that master spirit. Yeah, there's this mindal thing, you know, the reflective mother spirits, that's a mindal phenomenon. But in terms of spirit, which directs mind, you know, spirit dominates mind, you know, what's above, what encompasses, it's just one master spirit that encompasses all that mind. There's not crosstalk in the spirit direction of things. That's what they're getting at. Yep.
So that differentiation from 3 to 7 or 1 to 7, if you're just going to consolidate it to the infinite spirit, that or conjoint act, that happens right in paradise because the presences of the master spirits are right on the periphery of paradise. So that happens right within paradise, not even Havana.
The very fact that they're the master...
That's where the division starts.
See, you're
that's
thinking
logic.
Right,
you got to go to the very top to understand that. Right. You go halfway, it's going to be fuzzy thinking.
Right. That fact is how the Pattern Universe paper starts out. As a matter of fact, it's one of the first things in the Pattern Universe paper. You know, but yeah, I mean the fact that they're the master spirits of paradise.
Right.
You know, think about that very literally. In other words, there's something essential about that point for them coming into existence. It's not like they could come into existence somewhere out in the tule bushes and then are brought there. Yeah. The aisle is somehow key to their creation.
Yeah, to even the differentiation of reality.
Right. And so one of the things you could sort out is that fact. Expressing that fact precisely, understanding that. All right, let's see if there's anything else there. No, let's just go ahead.
The seven master spirits are collectively endowed with the supreme ultimate attributes of the third source and center. While each one individually partakes of this endowment, only collectively do they disclose the attributes of omnipotence, omniscience, and omnipresence. No one of them can so function universally. As individuals and in the exercise of these powers of supremacy and ultimacy, each is personally limited to the super universe of immediate supervision.
Okay, so this is in the wake of this very one-to-one correspondence that we were just talking about between the master spirits and the super universes. This is another way of thinking about that discreteness of their footprint. That they're very definitively qualified, but they're bringing in something again. That fact that we're finally going to get into detail when we get into the next section. This collective expression that, as you can tell, they're saying is not so qualified. For instance, just starting with what you have here, like we mentioned before, that superadditive consequence of the relationship between all seven, what results from what they have in common, this eighth fact that's above, is very directly supreme ultimate. Not just supreme and, ultimate. And look at how they even are getting you to do a similar thing already here to what we began to challenge ourselves to do with the Paradise Trinity. Initially we think of the three persons and we say there's the Paradise Trinity that's the superadditive consequence of the relationship between the three. But then we say, but we could look at it from the top-down point of view instead of the individuality viewpoint. We could think of everything being together, and then there's three components that are individuatable and personalizable, to boot, the three persons, and what's left, what couldn't be divided out, is the Paradise Trinity, and it's also not personalizable. Okay? So here, if you think of sort of there's a supreme ultimate fact, and I'm going to individuate out seven components, which are then personalizable when I do. That's the seven personalities, the seven master spirits. And a fact that's left above, see, when they say, while each one individually partakes of this endowment, see, that's putting you in this top-down point of view where you have a common reservoir. And so they're all going to partake of that. As you individuate them out of that, that common fact. Okay, they're going to be endowed, as they say, with a commonality. But when you do that, they're downstepped, and they can do supreme personality activity. They can do ultimate personality activity. But as an individual, they can't do supreme ultimate personality activity. The fact that that is still that undivided deity, see, actually snipping the hyphen between the supreme and ultimate, and dividing it, if it's undivided deity, that, you can already see it doesn't sound like it's a person, this eighth fact. Okay, and we're going to get, directly to that in the next section, like I said. See, that's what they're getting at. They're already setting up this parallel between thinking about the three persons in the Trinity, bottom up and top down, here with the same thing. The seven bottom up or top down.
Are you saying that, what did you say, there's super ultimate or ultimate? Is that the same as omnipotence and omniscience?
Okay, now see, bringing in omnipotence, omniscience, and omnipresence. Okay, omni is all, right? You know, and what do they follow that with? See, no one of them can so function universally. You know, the universally thing, that's the omni. Okay, none of them, you know, are transcendent and encompass the whole. Each one of them is just a part. But there is something they're saying that does encompass the whole. If you don't downstep it like this, if you don't snip the hyphen between supreme and ultimate, you have something that is, you know, transcendent and, you know, wraps around the whole from the outside.
What was that hyphenated word you used?
Supreme, ultimate, okay. Right there. That's in that first
sentence. Synonymous with omnipotence?
Well, in this instance.
That's all I wanted.
I mean, you use omni in, you know, in a hierarchical way. Mm-hmm. It's just whatever you're thinking.
When you say that, it's synonymous with omnipotence.
Here, they explain what they mean by it by saying universally. You know, each master spirit themselves is confined to a single super universe. But there's a fact that isn't confined. The super additive consequence of the relationship between the seven is all encompassing. It's omni. Okay. You know, and that just makes sense. See, it's super additive of all seven, so it would have to encompass all seven facts. It would have to be omnipresent around, you know, around all of that, all seven.
It's interesting they bring up this supreme ultimate.
Yeah, that's the word.
Collective embodiment that is omnipresent. It's not absolute, but it is omnipresent, omniscience and all this.
Right. The just note, you know, noticing that they tell you this very directly, it's like, well, how do I use that fact? Like we've pointed out, eventually you come to recognize that in order to think about the full picture of the levels of things, you know, if you look in the psychic circles in the sevenfold here, we've pointed out that you have two levels here. On the one hand, you have the reflective mother spirits, and above that, you have the creative mother agencies. You have a presence where there's, you know, at this level, it's the level of the individual super universe. There's seven separate wombs, okay, of the mother. Okay, but above that is above the level of the individual super universe is the level of the collective super universes. It's not it, but it's below the grand universe. Yeah, that's the supreme there. That's the universal mother. So there's something in between the universal mother for the grand universe and the reflective mother spirits for the individual super universe. There's a collective. Okay. See, that's what we're talking about here. See, what you're beginning to recognize is this is more of that part of the picture that doesn't immediately have to do with the ascension scheme. Remember, they don't directly talk about things that are subsequent to the ascension, you know, the rest of your career as a finaliter, because, you know, this is supposed to just be basically revealing the ascension scheme. But they often, you know, allude to that other half of your finite career. They have to, because if they don't, you could easily, you know, exceed the boundaries of the revelation. You know, you'd be immediately asking questions that are not answerable. In order for the picture to be complete, they need to give you the beginnings of, so that you can begin to put the pieces together. And that collective super universe level is obviously what you're functioning in as a finaliter. You're not limited to a super universe anymore. You're going through them all. But you obviously aren't up to the supreme level yet. That's what you're seeking. You're seeking God the Supreme. So you're somewhere above a super universe, below the grand universe, and you're in a collective mode. There has to be a womb, a domain that you're in. Okay, so that's, yeah, that's basically what's going on here, is just getting you to recognize logically where this fits in, this eighth fact that they're talking about here. Yeah. All right. Let's see, was there anything else in there? Okay, but just again, you know, each master spirit can do the supremacy thing and the ultimacy thing. See, but not where you've joined them together as supreme ultimate. Okay. All right.
All of everything which has been told you concerning the divinity and personality of the conjoined actor applies equally and fully to the seven master spirits who so effectively distribute the infinite spirit to the seven segments of the grand universe in accordance with their divine endowment and in the manner of their differing and individually unique natures. It would therefore be proper to apply to the collective group of seven any or all of the names of the infinite spirit. Collectively, they are one with the conjoint creator on all sub-absolute levels.
Okay. So just, for instance, you know, if you call the third source and center the mind bestower, you know, they're saying, you think collectively like this, that would be an appropriate name too for that whole collective fact. All seven and this eighth fact all together is a complete expression of mind bestower on all sub-absolute levels. And stressing all is not just finite, supreme, absonite, ultimate, not just those four, but all sub-absolute. There's one more. Co-absolute. Okay? Supreme ultimate personality activity engages co-absolute association. Okay? Transcendent of ultimacy. Sub-absolute, but transcendent of ultimate. Okay. In order to have all, you have to have an eighth fact to engage the co-absolute. Okay. And just when you say it very precisely like that, it's like, well, we kind of have gotten this the sense that a lot of times when we're talking about the difference between, say, finite and supreme, you have an actuality and a reality in that order. You know, you have a finite actuality that's being engaged by supreme personality activity, for instance. It's like, well, okay, so if I have actuality, reality, finite, supreme, actuality, reality, absonite, ultimate, go up into the notch of actuality. The reality is absolute, but just the actuality is a co-absolute. Well, if I had something that was just there, I wouldn't expect that to be a person. An actuality, but I wouldn't expect it to be, you know, a person perhaps. Yes, and that's what we're getting at here. We have these seven persons, but there's an eighth fact. It's not a person. Just like you have three persons and there's a fourth fact, it's not a person. Paradise Trinity is not a person. It's a definite actuality. Okay. See, they're trying to point, you have a very similar parallel here. It's just it's three in one case and seven in one in this case.
Tell me if it's really wrong to think about a marriage where you have a man and a woman, and then you have the marriage, which is not a person. But it's an actuality.
Only this is literal. This is not like a triunity. A triunity is not a literal, organic fact. It's like, for instance, the first triunity is just the association of the three persons functioning together. It's not a fourth organic fact. Okay. The Paradise Trinity is an organic, literal, you know, fact.
All that was left that couldn't be personal.
A thing. that you can poke. It's not just a concept of them working together. It's a literal thing.
They call it an entity.
Right. It's an entity.
Yeah.
It's a deity entity. You know, it's even more than a divine entity. It's a deity entity. This is another deity entity we're talking about here.
Yeah, right.
It's not just the seven of them doing things together. It's an eighth fact. I keep saying it that way to try to stress that. Okay, it's not like a triunity. Okay.
So you could consider it an individuation.
Yeah, it's a definite individuation. Yeah. It's going to have a boundary. You know, it's not, yeah, right. All right. It's going to define a spirit womb of some sort. Let's see. Where were we here now? So again, just, you know, that's you know, they're just stressing that right at the end. You know, just all sub-absolute. Just force yourself to, you know, to not just let that word all, you know, whenever you see something like that, stop and think, okay, now what exactly does that mean? Can I precisely list what that means? You know, they never, you know, list it all out, or almost never. They're expecting you to know what all means. You know, and if you're just thinking, all the finite, are you going to have less distortion of meaning or more distortion of meaning? You're going to be putting everything that follows in a very tiny box. You need to, you know, make sure that you're not, you know, limiting the revelation, you know, to your initial very qualified understanding.
You're talking finite, supreme, ultimate, absolute, ultimate, and
co-absolute. Five sub-absolute levels. Yeah. All right. So now, before you read some more, just the title. We're in this very precise mode. When they say identity and diversity of the master spirits. Okay, we've already been talking a lot about the diversity thing. So I bet I know what they're going to be talking about there. That's this sevenfold diversity. Identity. What do they mean by identity? Okay, personality identifies with a self. It makes that self an identity. Okay, so if you're talking about the identity of the master spirits. Yeah, there's seven absolutely unique persons, personalities, seven absolutely unique personalities identified with seven selves, okay, giving each of them an identity. I wonder why they're bringing that up. Well, let's see what they say in the first paragraph here.
Three, identity and diversity of the master spirits. The seven master spirits are indescribable beings, but they are distinctly and definitely personal. They have names, but we elect to introduce them by number. As primary personalizations of the infinite spirit, they are akin, but as primary expressions of the seven possible associations of triune deity, they are essentially diverse in nature. And this diversity of nature determines their differential of super-universe conduct. These seven master spirits may be described as follows.
Okay, so before we go in, let's figure out what they're doing again. This is sort of reiterating something I mentioned last week. Okay, let's see if we can answer this question. But we elect to introduce them by number. Who can tell me why? They elected to do that.
So that describes more of what their nature to us than a name would.
Well, yeah, it's getting at it. You've got what? Yeah, and we have an "and" in the title, identity and diversity. Okay, talking about two different things. Right, but in names, you give a name to. A person.
Oh.
Right? Okay. Seven master spirits are indescribable beings. Okay, they're beings, persons, not entities. Okay, we're talking about the whole personal being here. But they are distinctly and definitely personal. Okay, there's seven distinct identities here, but that's not the most important thing. It's like, yeah, of course there's seven unique persons, but that's not why there's seven distinct super universes. You know, in terms of the purposing of those persons, in terms of those seven identities, what does it say about them? They are akin. Okay, they call them by number so that you are reminded constantly that the seven super universes are not different because of the seven different personalities. Okay, these are seven possible associations of triune deity. You know, it's the deity that's the issue. Okay? By calling them by number, you know, you are, you know, just every time, you know, you refer to them by number like that, it's a little subtle reminder. The important thing here is the seven different flavors of deity, the seven different selves, the diversity of selves, not the distinctiveness of their personalities. You know, in any way that personalities is important to our understanding, you can think of it all as the same. You know, it's like purposing. It's not like there's some sort of inadequacy in the purposing in the first super universe, and that's why that ascender we were talking about earlier couldn't find the third person. And purposing is all perfect and akin. Okay? So that maybe answers a long-standing question you've had. You know, why are they referred in such, you know, numerical fashion like this? You know, actually, see, there is a paragraph about that. They don't spoon-feed the answer. You know, they're challenging you to pick through it and come to a recognition. All right, so... you know, you've heard me say that a lot. You know, when they say something like that, but we elect to introduce them by number, ask yourself why. Don't just say, well, okay, I just have to accept that, I guess. That's not engaging the truth of the revelation. Until you can answer a question like that, you know, until you can answer the why question about every sentence in the book, you're not going with the truth yet. You just have a book that you're reading words in and believing and getting feelings relative to. You know, and maybe feelings of, huh? You know, I mean, you've got it. You're trying to remember facts and, you know.
I saw it as the Father refers to them as their names, but we as individuals look up and recognize them based on how they relate to our universes. That's top-down, bottom-up kind of thing.
Right, but see, that's, yeah. That's not really getting very solidly to the point. That's a bit of a religious consciousness viewpoint of it.
No, I'm talking about the first universe is made up of the Father, the fifth universe is made of the Spirit and the Son, or whatever it is, and that's how we would relate to them. That's what they mean to us.
Right. But
from the top down, he sees them as their name. I mean, otherwise they wouldn't have a name. That name is important to somebody.
Right. But when you find that master spirit as a person on the seventh circuit of Avona, you'll call him by name. Okay. And they are definitely a person that you can know as a person. It's not just someone above that can see him as a person. They're very personal. They're saying, forget about that right now. That's not relevant. And it's very hard if you tend to view everything with your religious consciousness to set that aside. In order to really engage deity, you need a philosophic consciousness. That's the philosophic consciousness is what recognizes the deity. Fundamental quality of deity is unity. From a philosophic perspective, if you want a sort of a single name for God, you'd call God the universal unity. From a scientific perspective, you'd call him the first cause. The first cause, the universal unity. From a religious perspective, you'd call him the loving Father. Okay. You know, these are loving persons, but that's not the important issue. Can you set your religious consciousness aside and think about these seven persons with your philosophic consciousness? Okay? Where the thing that's up front and most important is their deity, not their personality.
Yeah. It's what happens right after the comma in a kin. Mm-hmm. Right after that. But as primary expressions.
Right.
Not a passive what they're trying to give you there.
Yeah.
That's pretty fundamental.
So I'm just trying to really stress this because this is the first challenge of any reader of the Revelation. Can you get out of your biased viewpoint where you see things initially with your religious consciousness? That's a biased perspective. Can you get a more holistic perspective? And that's one of the primary challenges.
We'll talk. Essentially diverse in nature.
Right.
That's not like personality.
Right. See.
Personalities don't make them.
It's
like
just
that.
You know the essence of what you know by nature, you know, not by identification.
Right.
You know, it's not this because of this identification that you have this. You know, which in a sense you can kind of think of as the nurture influence. The seven super universes are not nurtured into differences by the purposing of the personality.
Yeah.
They're different by nature.
That's what they say.
Yeah. All right. So now, we're going to go through the seven master spirits. The first six are quite boilerplate. Just like the first six, description of the first six worlds of the Father were very boilerplate. Why? Because it's the other six schemes and they can't really tell us anything about them. You know, and so, you know, you can read this first block about Master Spirit number one. You can go back and read the block about De Vennington and you can see all kinds of common, you know, just pair up, you know, they repeat themselves a lot. It's like, well, okay, this is about this kind of stuff we can't tell you about. And the next one says, well, this is about this kind of stuff we can't tell you about. You know, they basically say the same thing, both here and in the Father's world. Not much at all. Until you get to number seven, of course. You want to always be looking, and so you want to carefully think about every word they say. See if we can find anything in here we can tease maybe a little bit more out about these other six schemes. You know, can we get any additional sense of what they're about? Did they do any of that sort of, well, we can't tell you directly, but if you look at the shape of the boundary around what we can't tell you, you know, that sort of indirect, you know, they try their best to do that sort of stuff, and so you always want to be looking for that. Okay.
Master Spirit number one.
In a special manner, this spirit is the direct representation of the Paradise Father. He is a peculiar and efficient manifestation of the power, love, and wisdom of the Universal Father. He is the close associate and supernal advisor of the Chief of Mystery Monitors, that being who presides over the College of Personalized Adjusters on De Vennington. In all associations of the seven master spirits, it is always master spirit number one who speaks for the universal father. This spirit presides over the first super universe, and while unfailingly exhibiting the divine nature of a primary personalization of the infinite spirit, seems more especially to resemble the Universal Father in character. He is always in personal liaison with the seven reflective spirits at the headquarters of the first super universe.
Okay. He is a peculiar and efficient manifestation. Does that mean he's an odd and efficient? No, not peculiar in that sense. He's a unique.
Really unique.
Right. Like they said further down, especially, saying it that way.
And then even at the beginning, in a special manner.
Right. Just in case you aren't used to using peculiar, in that sense of unique rather than odd. So sure enough, it brings up the Vinnington. It's the same pattern, the seven worlds of the Father. First one's the Vinnington. Here are the first master spirits connected to the Vinnington. So that's not surprising. But it is kind of interesting, but I hadn't really thought about the consequences of that, that close connection between the first master spirit and Divinington, that he is the close associate and supernal advisor. Okay. So, that gets you thinking a little bit. Like, so that scheme, other than the ascension scheme, that's primary in the first super universe, and we just really don't know much about, would this say something about it? If are the adjusters, or the father fragments in general, involved in that first scheme in some way, very much apart from being adjusters for ascenders? Does that have something to do with that first scheme? See, you have a little something here that can be suspicious of. You don't know exactly what to do with it because we don't really know what the other father fragments are and whatnot. That's probably as far as they were allowed to go. It's just to remind you of what you could have deduced. That the first master spirit must be really closely associated with the father fragments. I wonder what that implies. So that's the kind of thing you're looking for. It's just those little, I'm just kind of wondering, what it would be like in a super universe if sort of the primary foot forward had an awful lot to do with this close association between that master spirit and the father fragments. Okay, and especially that second paragraph is the real boilerplate thing that you'll see repeated over and over as we go through here, even in with the seventh master spirit. All right, so there you have number one.
Master spirit number two. This spirit adequately portrays the matchless nature and charming character of the Eternal Son, the firstborn of all creation. He is always in close association with all orders of the sons of God, whenever they may happen to be in the residential universe as individuals or in joyous conclave. In all the assemblies of the seven master spirits, he always speaks for and in behalf of the Eternal Son. This spirit directs the destinies of Super Universe Number 2 and rules this vast domain, much as would the Eternal Son. He is always in liaison with the seven reflective spirits situated at the capital of the second Super Universe.
Okay, so an awful lot of that is just what you'd expect from the calling him a number and putting him in the pattern of the numbers. Saying some things just like they do about Sanarrington, the second father world, or tied to here, Sanarrington. You do notice that they put in a few more words about the son. So he portrays the matchless nature and charming character of the Eternal Son. It's like, that seems like kind of flowery language. I wonder why they threw that in. See, that might be, again, a little subtle hint. It's like, so yeah, I guess I hadn't just, the second scheme is going to have some sort of a dominance of expression tied to the sun. Maybe I could go back and read the two papers about the eternal sun. Maybe I could do some speculation. Is there something in there that maybe I could, you know, think, well, I wonder if that could take a really separate expression in some way as the second scheme. Yeah, I'm sure that's what's going on here. Any extent to which one of these little blocks of text go beyond just total boilerplate that a computer could generate, you know, it's got to be trying to suggest something to you.
A little stencil shadow going.
Yeah.
Super Universe number two is Charm School.
You know, it's like, you know, well, exactly what is the charming character of the Eternal Sun? Do I even know what that means? You know, or, and I don't claim to have gone through the, you know, but it's.
It could be done.
It could be done. It's something that, you know, there may be a sentence somewhere in those two papers about the Eternal Sun that you go, oh, wait a minute, you know, there may be a clue. Yeah, just keying off of what they what they emphasize here.
Master Spirit number three. This spirit personality especially resembles the Infinite Spirit, and he directs the movements and work of many of the high personalities of the Infinite Spirit. He presides over their assemblies and is closely associated with all personalities who take exclusive origin in the third source and center. When the seven master spirits are in council, it is Master Spirit number three who always speaks for the Infinite Spirit. This spirit is in charge of Super Universe number three, and he administers the affairs of this segment much as would the Infinite Spirit. He is always in liaison with the reflective spirits at the headquarters of the third Super Universe.
Like, wow, that looks pretty scant to me, huh? It's pretty slim. Pickens there.
I know,
you just, so there may be some really harsh limits in play there about what they could say. You know, it's like, what are you going to go on? It's like, well, okay, I can think along the lines of the previous one. Like I said, you know, you can go up and read what they say about Spiritington. You know, which of course is the father world we're tied to here, and you know, and it's very sparse too. So, not a lot to go on here.
They're describing more really what he does rather than what he is. To me, it seems like it's more of what he does.
It's just very numerical. See, you know,
he does this and he does that and he does this, kind of like Jesus right before his.
And the word work is in there.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you can sort of just, you think, well, okay, I'm just going to directly take the Infinite Spirit. But it's like, wow, that doesn't help much because like we talked about, I mean, there's few things that are more complicated than the infinite, you know, than the third source and center. I mean, there's so many things that come, that feed into that fact. It's like, well, how does that give me any clue about the third scheme? Now, it seems like it could be anything. So it's really hard to know what to do with that one.
That's by the numbers.
Yeah.
It's the God of action.
There you go.
It's not
that's what I was thinking.
Words. It's not thoughts. Right. It's
what he acts.
It's what he does.
And it says movement.
Right, but you know, but how does that, you know, express as some scheme that's like the ascension scheme? That's, you know, the imponderable.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's one thing to think about what, you know, he does to his super universe. It's going to be third source and center like, but you know, how do the creatures sort of respond to that? What's the other side of the equation? I mean, you know, in response to what the seventh master spirit does, the ascension scheme, you know, reciprocally is the dominant expression. What reciprocates in the third super universe because of this? That's the question.
Would it have to do with beauty? Because it's such an array of beautiful beings from the infinite spirit.
Again, I mean, you know, you can just, they're obviously leaving it wide open. You know, play with it as you want.
I'm reminded of Mary and Joseph when Jesus was growing up, and they said that Mary was a disciplinarian. And so I think of Mary more in this role of this master spirit number three. She just enforced action. She impelled her children to action. And it was left to Joseph to have to explain to Jesus why they had to do the things the way they did them. So, mm-hmm. Whereas Joseph was embodying more the Son and the Father, And she was just more like that action orientation of the infinite spirit. It also says, too, all the real work in civilization has been done by women.
That's a great example of you give someone a very blank slate like this, and you can paint a lot of pictures on it, see? That's the thing. The second adjutant just starts going crazy, And you're left to wonder, it's like, well, okay, that's a thought, but, how can I put that thought to the test? How can I attempt to refute that? There's not a lot to go on, see, where you can really critically engage it. It's just kind of a big question mark in the end. All right, how about number four here?
Master Spirit number four. Partaking of the combined natures of the Father and the Son, this Master Spirit is the determining influence regarding Father-Son policies and procedures in the councils of the seven Master Spirits. This Spirit is the chief director and advisor of those ascendant beings who have attained the Infinite Spirit and thus have become candidates for seeing the Son and the Father. He fosters that enormous group of personalities taking origin in the Father and the Son. When it becomes necessary to represent the Father and the Son in the association of the seven Master Spirits, it is always Master Spirit number four who speaks. This Spirit fosters the fourth segment of the grand universe in accordance with his peculiar association of the attributes of the Universal Father and the Eternal Son. He is always in personal liaison with the reflective spirits of the headquarters of the fourth super universe.
Okay. So what's the Father's world here? Who remembers what world number four is? Vice Jerrington. Okay. And when they talk about the secrets of Vice Jerrington, Trinitization. One of the secrets. Notice there's some stuff that goes beyond the boilerplate here. So this is interesting. This spirit is the chief director and advisor of those ascendant beings. They can talk about ascendant stuff when it relates to the ascension scheme, see? And there's something key here, so they can talk about it. To those ascended beings who have attained the infinite spirit and thus have become candidates for seeing the Son and the Father. Okay, so when you're going through the circuits of Avona, you're working on achieving that personal recognition of the conjoint actor when you're on which circuit? Seven, six, five. Five, right? Right? And the Son is four, Father's three. Okay. So they're invoking that. Okay, so if you have an ascender who's found the infinite spirit on the fifth circuit, and they've got the Son and the Father next, and this master spirit's going to play a role with them. Well, you remember how you have a secondary supernafim that's helping you on each circuit, a secondary supernafim devoted to just that circuit's task for you. When you're trying to find the Son, they're called Son Finders. When you're trying to find the Father, they're called Father Guides. When you're trying to find the Infinite Spirit, you guys remember this kind of is a little different what they're called. They're called Trinity Guides. So you have Father Guides, Son Finders, but you don't have Spirit Guides. You have Trinity Guides. Okay, so you're talking about, so you have an ascender, he's been helped along by a Trinity Guide, and then the next thing in play is Master Spirit number four, is tied to Vice Gerrington. The secret is Trinitization. Trinity followed by Trinity. Okay. And the ascension scheme, like we've come to recognize, that has a lot to do with Trinity natures. We're going to, you know, when we get to Master Spirit number 7. So this is another way of stressing that. The fact that the Trinitization, you know, in ways that are deeply mysterious, is tied to Vice Gerrington and hence tied to Master Spirit number 4. And Trinity issues have a lot to do with the senders, much more than Father issues. See, so that's the connection, is just to further stress and get you trying to penetrate that revelation that as an ascender, I'm attempting to come into great relationship with the Trinity, much more so than the Father or the Son or the Spirit individually. You know, and everyone who has some really close association with Trinity or Trinitization play a big role in my ascension scheme, like Master Spirit number 4 and his, you know, still mysterious relationship to Trinity issues, or Trinitization issues anyway. Okay, so that's what's going on there. And then the rest is sort of just what you expect from Vice Gerrington, you know, the father-son stuff and the boilerplate about what, you know, engaging his super universe. All right.
Master Spirit number 5. This divine personality who exquisitely blends the character of the Universal Father and the Infinite Spirit is the advisor of that enormous group of beings known as the power directors, power centers, and physical controllers. This spirit also fosters all personalities taking origin in the Father and the conjoined actor. In the councils of the 7 Master Spirits, when the Father Spirit attitude is in question, it is always Master Spirit number 5 who speaks. This spirit directs the welfare of the 5th super universe in such a way as to suggest the combined action of the Universal Father and the Infinite Spirit. He is always in liaison with the reflective spirits at the headquarters of the 5th super universe.
Okay. Got a little bit more on boilerplate there again. Which father's world is this?
Solid Tarrington.
Solid Tarrington, right. They mentioned the power beings up there, too. And here they're bringing it up again. It's like, so they want me to think about that part of it a little bit more. Not so much of why they called it Solid Tarrington, where they were trying to sort of rationalize in the solitary messengers and give us a little something to work with. In passing up there, they mentioned the power beings. And here they're, you know, here they're really bringing that forward more definitively. The power beings, you know, the universe power directors, you know, all the different flavors, directors, centers, controllers. Well, let's see, what do I know about them? Those are third source personalities. Oh, I hadn't stopped to think about that until they forced me to kind of reflect on this a little bit more. This is the Father and the Spirit, this pair. For Master Spirit number 5, no son involved. No absolute father personality in play. You take the absolute of father, of first source personality, the absolute of father personality out of the picture totally, and you're going to liberate the space to be much more purely a third source personality domain. So I wonder if the 5th scheme, maybe the 5th scheme has something to do, maybe third source personalities are the, you know, in some way are the dominant phenomenon in the 5th super universe, do you suppose? There's a whole bunch of unrevealed third source personalities that are up to something there.
Could they be on ascension scheme too?
Well, There may be ascension associated with them or something, you know, but it's not sort of the ascension scheme, you know, of seeking the Father, seeking the first source of first source personality. You know, you don't know exactly what to do with it, but see, that's one thing that sort of kind of comes out of that. It's like, well, what, you know, what sort of goes beyond the powerness of the power beings? Their third source personalities, you know, and that, so that's a, you know, that makes me suspicious about that one. There might be something there too. About the fifth scheme. You know, a way that you can appreciate the connection between the infinite spirit as the reservoir of third source personality. And the universal Father, part of the God the Father is the universal Father. Another part is the reservoir of first source personality, the first source. You know, and before it was just the first source, you go back before you had Father, Son, Spirit or anything, you just had total will, reservoir of all will, and it's getting split into two reservoirs, the first source and the infinite spirit, first source personality, and the reservoir for first source personality, and the reservoir for third source personality. So you can see how if you take the absolute of first source personality out of play, that sort of behind the scenes connection between the reservoirs, you know, is there. Creative Mother Spirit's a third source personality, yeah. A very special one because she has this very intimate ability to relate to first source personalities that, say, power beings don't as third source personalities. But yeah, see, so that's the kind of thing they want, you know. It's those sort of details that go, you know, away from anything immediate about the ascension scheme. You know, when you really start to contemplate exactly what you mean by third source personality and all that, you know, you're really kind of going aside from the ascension scheme. And that's what I'm saying, you know. That's what the other six schemes are, something that's parallel and to the side. Okay, so that's another one that gives you something to chew on a little bit.
Master Spirit number 6. This divine being seems to portray the combined character of the Eternal Son and the Infinite Spirit. Whenever the creatures jointly created by the Son and the Spirit foregather in the central universe, it is this Master Spirit who is their advisor. And whenever in the councils of the seven Master Spirits, it becomes necessary to speak conjointly for the Eternal Son and the Infinite Spirit, it is Master Spirit number 6 who responds. This spirit directs the affairs of the sixth super universe much as would the Eternal Son and the Infinite Spirit. He is always in liaison with the reflective spirits at the headquarters of the sixth super universe.
Pretty boilerplate there again, see? Not much to play with. All right. Like I said, see, there's an awful lot like reading the first six Father's Worlds. It's like, you know, not a lot more than the boilerplate. But now look what happens when you go to the Master Spirit number 7. In the Ascension Scheme, okay, they can reveal lots. And you know, as we get into this, you're going to be going, whoa, this gets meaty. This is challenging you to recognize that there's great complexity in play fundamentally with the Ascension Scheme. We've touched upon that quite a bit. You know, if there's a lot of relationship to the Trinity, the totality attitude, to really begin to go beyond your initial simple relationship, you know, or understanding of the Ascension Scheme, you've got to start bringing in the totality attitude, the Trinity, the Mother, the big picture, the whole. This distinction is vital. Yeah, you see, that's immediately where this is going to go as we start to unpack this. It's going to have an awful lot to do with not the Father.
Master Spirit number 7. The presiding spirit of the seventh superuniverse is a uniquely equal portrayal of the Universal Father, the Eternal Son, and the Infinite Spirit. The seventh spirit, the fostering advisor of all triune origin beings, is also the advisor and director of all the ascending pilgrims of Havona, those lowly beings who have attained the courts of glory through the combined ministry of the Father, the Son, and the Spirit.
Oh, yeah, before I forget. So the previous one, what's the Father's world on the previous one?
Sir
Raffington, yeah. And, of course, here it's?
Ascendington.
Okay, so those are the two Father's worlds. And, you know, that first part, pretty boilerplate, pretty straightforward. It's like, yeah, okay, that's what I know, Father, Son, Spirit.
Sir Raffington doesn't give you much help for...
It would be akin to a betrayal of trust. Say much of anything about the sixth master spirit. Yes.
A real stencil.
Yes.
The seventh master spirit is not organically representative of the Paradise Trinity, but it is a known fact that his personal and spiritual nature is the conjoint actor's portraiture in equal proportions of the three infinite persons whose deity union is the Paradise Trinity, and whose function as such is the source of the personal and spiritual nature of God the Supreme. Hence, the seventh Master Spirit discloses a personal and organic relationship to the Spirit Person of the Evolving Supreme. Therefore, in the Master Spirit Councils on High, when it becomes necessary to cast the ballot for the combined personal attitude of the Father, Son, and Spirit, or to depict the spiritual attitude of the Supreme Being, it is Master Spirit number 7 who functions. He thus inherently becomes the presiding head of the Paradise Council of the seven Master Spirits.
Well, that there's a little bit of boilerplate there. There's, for instance, that, and then a little bit that goes beyond, like that last sentence. The presiding head. And of course, that should immediately remind you, they do have that speculation that when the grand universe is settled in light and life, that the Supreme Being might actually take up as his point of residence, capital of the seventh super universe. So see, that ties into that presiding head fact. Now, the thing that strikes you is that first half of that paragraph. And notice that the italicized is 3 times. Okay. That's really pounding on you to think very precisely. They have a therefore. And so let's get into that a little bit. Let's think very carefully about what they're saying. Because we notice immediately we don't just have Father, Son, Spirit. We're talking about the Trinity. We're talking about the Supreme. Okay. But it is a known fact that his personal and spiritual nature is the conjoint actor's portraiture in equal proportions of the three infinite persons whose deity union is the Paradise Trinity, and whose function as such, in other words, the Paradise Trinity, which is deity, it functions, remember? You don't really think of it as acting, but it functions. Paradise Trinity, functioning, it functions as such, or whose function as such is the source of the personal and spiritual nature of God the Supreme. Okay, well, we've talked about that a lot. The Paradise Trinity as an original point, as an originating point on the other side from the first center. Not the Father side of the original, but the Mother side of the original. When it says, is the source of the personal and spiritual nature of God the Supreme, personal purposive. Another way we could say that, and whose function as such is the source of God the Mother. Yeah, the personal and spirit nature of God the Supreme, that's God the Mother. What's the power pattern nature of God the Supreme?
God the Almighty.
God the Almighty. But the personal and spiritual nature of God the Supreme, God the Mother. Okay, so right there, you know, remember this, you know, this is paper 16. It's a long ways away from way up there in the Supreme Papers when they finally, you know, tell you how to take all those words and put them together and call it God the Mother. Okay, that's what that is. Okay, we've got God the Mother in play here. All right, and then it says, hence, the seventh master spirit discloses a personal and organic relationship to the spirit person of the evolving Supreme. Evolving, not evolved. So we're not talking about the Supreme Being. Okay? The spirit person of the evolving Supreme. So in other words, how would I word that? Hence, the seventh master spirit discloses a personal and organic relationship to the universal mother. Okay? The seventh master spirit is in resonance with the universal mother. Okay. And you'll see why I'm carefully, you know, getting these into a pithy expression, because they're going to use that down here. And if you can't use that, you don't know how to interpret what comes subsequent here. But just see, we know about how this works, that thinking about God the Supreme is a complicated thing, but if you carefully start sorting it out. I mean, the first clue was that they said God the Supreme, the top-down viewpoint designation. You know, what's the title of the paper that introduces the mother aspect? God the Supreme, title of that paper. Okay. Okay, so the universal mother is very much in play. When you think about the person that is the seventh master spirit and the things that that person can do, they can represent the universal mother. He can represent the universal mother. See, which is an interesting thing to say. A he representing a she. All right. That's what they're initiating you there with, and just the fact that that universal mother personality is being expressed in the mode of the presiding head. What's the word that we often notice that you know reminds us of that they're referring to the or alluding to the mother? Coordinate. Yeah. The coordination of all seven. Okay, the presiding head. See, that has to be a mother-like phenomenon in order to coordinate. See, he can do this because he has this resonance with the universal mother. All right.
No one of the seven spirits is organically representative of the Paradise Trinity. But when they unite as sevenfold deity, this union, in a deity sense, not in a personal sense, equivalates to a functional level associable with the Trinity functions. In this sense, the sevenfold spirit is functionally associable with the Paradise Trinity. It is also in this sense that Master Spirit number seven sometimes speaks in confirmation of Trinity attitudes, or rather acts as spokesman for the attitude of the sevenfold spirit union regarding the attitude of the threefold deity union, the attitude of the Paradise Trinity.
Okay, so the mother stuff is one issue. This is the other issue that's in play. That eighth fact, okay, they have it, you know, point blank here. Sevenfold deity. This eighth fact is deity. Okay? And they even give you a name for it. That eighth fact is called the sevenfold spirit. There's seven master spirits and an eighth thing called the sevenfold spirit. It's not a person. It's deity only. Okay? And it's like, you know, you can just see him pointing out what we stressed earlier on. It's very much parallel to the three persons in the Paradise Trinity, the seven persons and the sevenfold spirit. The sevenfold spirit and the Paradise Trinity have a lot of commonality, a lot of very suggestive connection. Where it's like, well, I wonder if the Paradise Trinity has something to do with bringing the sevenfold spirit into existence. You might wonder if they're this intimately associated. And that's advanced stuff to, you know, start playing around with that. But just right here, this is the, you know, this is the one spot where they give you the name. So when you're ready to start talking about this eighth fact and how it fits into the big picture, like, it's indispensable to understanding the central universe. If you don't have the sevenfold spirit as an eighth fact, you're not going to figure out the central universe. Here's where they give you the name so that you can start talking about it and thinking about it and putting it in the picture, the sevenfold spirit. Okay, it's a literal deity fact, just like the Paradise Trinity. And let's see, what else we have in there? Let's see.
And that's co-absolute.
Well, and yeah, and the thing is, you really want to, you know, call it supreme ultimate deity, to kind of really bring out a little bit more of the flavor of what's in play. To say co-absolute, see, this is a tricky thing. They were struggling with nomenclature here. When you get up to the co-absolute, things get really complicated. And see, you actually have to have, you have the co-absolute just sort of purely as an actuality with nothing fancy like deity or God or anything, you know, brought into the picture. You're just thinking abstractly about this higher level of actuality, finite, absonite, co-absolute. And but there's two ways for personality activity to come at that, or for mind activity to come at that, for deity to come at that, bottom up and top down. If it's top down, you bring in the word absolute. If it's bottom up, it's supreme hyphen ultimate. You know, sort of what you're thinking of is overlaid. So when you're really talking about the deity engagement of the co-absolute level, you want to say supreme ultimate. You know, to provide some contrast to just the sort of the, okay, just the mere, you know, actuality there of the co-absolute. Okay.
From our point of view, we call it supreme ultimate.
Yeah. So when you think about well, see, and really, when all is said and done, you have to just have both words. I mean, you're totally up there. You're not really thinking bottom up. You know, when you're up in the co-absolute, you have to describe what's going on in front of you, and there's two different things: things that are tied to what's below, and things that are tied to what's above. You know, so you call, well, this stuff is supreme ultimate deity. This is absolute deity. Okay, and they're right there, yeah, together, okay, in the same level. So the sevenfold spirit is supreme ultimate deity. You know, capital D, just like they're doing there. Did I say the sevenfold spirit? Did I say it correctly?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, for a second there, I thought I might have said the wrong thing. All right. You know, and an initial, and you notice that the way they, you know, the last phrasing there is just that on-ramp, trying to help you still to even think about the Paradise Trinity, you know, calling it threefold deity union, sevenfold deity union. But you're certainly, you can begin to let go of that and just think about it directly. Call it the Paradise Trinity. Call it the sevenfold spirit. It's like, okay, I've got this thing. Now, what does it do? You know, and just take it in a more existential fashion than trying to think about it, you know, its origin from a bottom-up point of view and calling it in, by some name that reflects that. Just, you know, once you've been introduced to it as Sevenfold Spirit Union, well, then just call it the Sevenfold Spirit and, yeah. Okay. Right. It's, yeah, they're trying to say, if you're going to call it something, call it the Sevenfold Spirit. They, like you've heard me mention, they're very good about that, where, you know, when you get to the point when you need to call it something, if they think that you could potentially coin a designation that would lead to more distortion of meaning, they'll actually give you the term that you... I'll suggest the term to use. If they know you're going to get it without them, you know, directly putting in the book, then they don't. You know, they don't have to literally say the finite upholder. You know, they know you're going to, you know, figure that out, and you know, you're not going to end up calling that, you know, the Glorp Glick. You know, you're going to call it the finite upholder, and everything's going to be cool. You know, and yeah, so. But here they, you know, they're thinking, well, you know, they might dream up some name that might be, you know, not helpful, so let's just give them the name. All right, now they kind of put it together here.
The multiple functions of the seventh master spirit thus range from a combined portraiture of the personal natures of the Father, Son, and Spirit through a representation of the personal attitude of God the Supreme to a disclosure of the deity attitude of the Paradise Trinity. And in certain respects, this presiding spirit is similarly expressive of the attitudes of the ultimate and of the supreme ultimate.
See, and similarly expressive, you know, as a deity attitude. You notice, you know, it said God the Supreme, you know, and it was a personal attitude. Yeah. But here it's just the ultimate, not God the ultimate, just the ultimate, just the deity. You know, and just the deity, the supreme ultimate. Okay, those two facets of deity also find expression, you know, of their attitude through the seventh master spirit. It's like, wow, that's complicated. Okay, and then just remind yourself, this is the ascension scheme guy.
Yeah.
Okay. This is a subtle subtext reminder of what complexity lies in store for if you're going to accomplish the ascension scheme. You have to accomplish this kind of complex relationship to the whole. I mean, talk about some totality attitude in play here.
Yeah.
Okay.
As a job description, who would apply for that?
Right. I mean, it's like, I just sort of just recognized that there is this thing called the supreme ultimate. Now you're telling me that I'm going to, yeah, I mean, right? The ascension scheme is a huge challenge. And so that's part of the point that's in play here is to really come to terms with how non-trivial this fact is that we love to just sort of spit out, oh, I'm going to ascend to paradise. It's like, do you know what that means? To be one of the ascenders, you, unlike many, have to engage totality attitude, not just some little biased thread, like just the Father thread through everything. So, you know, you should be starting to really appreciate, you know, how bringing God the Mother, you know, out of the revelation is important to really begin to sort of initiate yourself truthfully in the ascension scheme. Why the Mother influence is going to dominate the growth of your soul all the way up through the local universe. Because you're an ascender, okay? And it's about serious totality attitude. As a finaliter, you're going to comb every nook and cranny of all seven super universes. Some serious totality attitude.
Yeah. For the possible trinitizer destiny thing going on.
All right, there's just all of this, right.
Is that exclusive to the ascension scheme? Or?
Probably not, we obviously know that in order to do the really, really profound things in regard to Trinitization, you're going to have a very close, definitive relationship to the Trinity, and certainly, like we're seeing, the Ascension Scheme is, you know. But we noticed that Trinitization came up quite a bit with Vice Jerrington and, you know, and number four, too, so... all right, so there's the complexity of the seventh master spirit. Now they got a paragraph where they're going to talk about some of you coming into relationship with that complexity on the sixth circuit of Avona. That whole bit about supremacy on the sixth circuit of Avona, the secondary supernafim that are guiding you on the sixth circuit are the supremacy guides. Okay, and the seventh master spirit is going to be helping you along with the supremacy guides. Oh, by the way, you know, who, those angels, the secondary supernafim, who created them? The seven master spirits. So it's a pretty close relationship we're talking about there. All right.
It is master spirit number seven who, in his multiple capacities, personally sponsors the progress of the ascension candidates from the worlds of time in their attempts to achieve comprehension of the undivided deity of supremacy. Such comprehension involves a grasp of the existential sovereignty of the Trinity of Supremacy, so coordinated with a concept of the growing experiential sovereignty of the Supreme Being, as to constitute the creature grasp of the unity of supremacy. Creature realization of these three factors equals Havona comprehension of Trinity reality and endows the pilgrims of time with the ability eventually to penetrate the Trinity to discover the three infinite persons of deity.
Okay, let's that last part first, since we alluded to it earlier. Remember, the next circuit, you have the Trinity guides. And, you know, notice how they word it very literally. So you're trying to... you know, discover and recognize the personality of the conjoint actor, okay? But in order to get to the third source and center, the personal, you know, the deity presence, you have to penetrate the functioning of the Paradise Trinity in the Most Holy Sphere. When you get to Paradise, the luminosity of the functioning of the Trinity, you know, bathes you. You know, but you can't penetrate it. It's a radiant fog that completely enshrouds the Father, Son, and Spirit. You have to get to the point where you can penetrate through the Trinity in order to see the third person. Okay, and notice, to discover the three infinite persons of deity. There you are in Paradise. So the infinite persons, you know, are there. Okay, so there's that part. Now there's a really complicated part in the middle there. Notice, you know, they give you all this stuff that you can't quite understand, and then they say, creature realization. Oh, yeah, that's right. I'm trying to realize something on the sixth circuit of Avona. I'm trying to realize supremacy. Matter of fact, it reminded me I'm trying to realize the undivided deity of supremacy on the sixth circuit. And it says, creature realization of these three factors equals Avona comprehension. Okay, three factors. Okay, so can we sort that out? What are those three factors? So you back up, and you go, okay, so such comprehension involves a grasp of the existential sovereignty of the Trinity of Supremacy. Okay, so factor number one is this existential fact, Okay, the Trinity of Supremacy, that's just the functioning of the Paradise Trinity on the supreme level. I'm trying to engage the supreme level here. So one of the things that's there is that existential Paradise Trinity functioning as the Trinity of Supremacy. It's like, okay, so there's one, Trinity of Supremacy. So coordinated, okay, just reading that, oh, I should be thinking Mother. So coordinated with a concept of the growing, not grown, growing experiential sovereignty of the Supreme Being. Okay, so when they say it that way, they're not talking about, you know, the grown fact, the finished fact, the power personality synthesis, the He, the Supreme Being. We're talking about the growing experiential sovereignty. Okay, that's the Universal Mother. Oh, that's right. It told me up there that the seventh master spirit can present that fact to me. Oh, and it also told me that the seventh master spirit can present the Trinity thing. Ah, okay. So I have both the Universal Mother and the Trinity. The seventh master spirit is helping me with both of those. Okay, so the Trinity of Supremacy and the Universal Mother, those are two of the factors. You got something you want to bring in for me?
I keep going.
Okay.
I don't want to steal your thunder.
Okay, so that's the two of them. And then what's the third one? They say there's three. It's like, well, okay. So you put those two to coordinate them together as to constitute the creature grasp of the unity of supremacy. Okay, so the third thing is something that here they're calling the unity of supremacy. Okay, that's a pretty advanced thing to give a label to. But I've referred to it. When you begin to sort this out some more, and it's obviously very important if you're going to sort out the central universe, to get a definitive label for that third factor, that's what you would call the Supreme Spirit. Two capital S's. Okay, unity. The Supreme Spirit. Unity, see? Okay. The way that works, and I know this is getting really complicated, but I referred to this before. I mean, there's a deity presence that is focused on the sixth circuit there. That's very much what out here we call the finite upholder. There's this reciprocal relationship between inside the central universe and outside the central universe. Where on the, you know, if you think about reciprocal things here, if we have a finger pointing up and a finger pointing down. So if out here we've got the real finite stuff happening, and it all has to be upheld, okay, by the finite upholder. Okay, and when we say that, we're not, you know, when we say the Universal Mother, we're bringing in the idea of an individual person, you know, a personal purposive fact from an individuality viewpoint. We want to give that person a name, the Universal Mother. But if we're just thinking about the deity, you know, sort of the main facet of deity that's functioning, you know, it's the upholder, the finite upholder. So out here we call it the finite upholder. The reciprocal way of experiencing that fact, the way you experience that fact when you're on the inside, when you're in the central universe, is not so much as the finite upholder. Remember when we talked about it, you know, you get up, you work your way up through individuality, associativity, unity, in two phases, up through the three levels of the local universe and up through the three levels of the super universe. You get this full-blown unity, like I said here, established. Then you go into the central universe, and that becomes your new foundation. And you go up from that unity through associativity to a new transcendent individuality. It's a reciprocal in there. The floor, so if I'm not so much thinking about this deity engaging me as upholding me, but being more the floor under me, then I'm gonna try to find this floor and be able to stand on that floor. I'm gonna call that the Supreme Spirit. Okay, the spirit floor that we have. Okay, in the central universe. So the finite upholder, the Supreme Spirit, it's really the same deity, it's just how it's relating to you, give it two different expressions, whether or not you're on the outside or on the inside. You know, you're really in an absonite scheme in the central universe, so you're kind of, you know, not really doing the finite thing is directly anymore, see? Okay. You know, you have the absonite upholder starting to come into play there, okay? But that fact that out here is recognized as that deity functioning of the mother, the finite upholder, and there is the Supreme Spirit. That's what. So you have the Trinity of Supremacy, the Universal Mother, and the Supreme Spirit. Really are the sort of the pithy designations for these three factors. Okay. And the Seventh Master Spirit is going to help you, you know, with all three. All right, so that's how complicated the sixth circuit of Avona is. You know, I'm an ascender, and that's just the sixth circuit. It's already that complicated.
Yeah. The three cosmic intuitions are our primary mm-hmm. resonance
right.
with the seventh master spirit.
Yeah. And along that line, you know, of the three cosmic intuitions, you know, and just bringing them in is really starting to bring in this full-rounded philosophic engagement, you know, consecrating your mind. You know, are you starting to see, I mean, that just to try to talk about the seventh scheme involves a lot of stuff that doesn't sound like religion talk. You notice how this hasn't sounded a lot like religion talk tonight? This is all very mind-stretching. This is a philosophic conversation. The fifth epical revelation is revealing to us that this whole bit about taking delight in cultivating is not just about helping out with civilization here on this benighted sphere. Yeah, that's an important thing. But this holistic, unbiased relationship to the totality, yeah, has a lot to do with the ascension scheme itself. That anyone who's going to be an ascender has to have a very holistic, not just on the science side, not just on the religion side, but it has to all be encompassed. It has to be a triunity. You need a philosophic relationship to the cosmos to really even get started on the ascension scheme. It's so fundamentally philosophic, see, in its nature. See, so that, you know, gives you an interesting thought. It's like, well, the other six schemes, you know, might they have some bias in that perspective, or if the seventh scheme is so holistic, you know, like this, maybe that's another clue. I mean, we got the seven by taking three. Yeah, there's three here too. You know, it brings in some more things. You know, you can wonder about whether or not science, philosophy, and religion, does that, can you do seven different expressions of that and have something to do with the seven schemes?
Well, I was, just as you started to say that, I was thinking, do you think that the other six schemes actually have something to do in support of the seventh scheme?
Well,
that they're not absolutely separate things in and of themselves, but it's all integrated in some way.
Right, and that's true in general. I mean, the seventh is also supporting, you know, the other six. That's part of why one of the things that was repeated, they made sure that they repeated in every single block here. Well, we haven't gotten to the seventh one yet, but that each super universe has seven reflective mother spirits. And we mentioned that before. I mean, and they aren't seven independent presences. They're one conjoint presence. There's the most intimate, you know, association between the seven different schemes possible. They couldn't be more intimate. The seven are together as one in the very presence of the upholder at the super, you know, the individual super universe level, the seven reflective mother spirits. So, yeah. Okay, so that's the difficult unpacking of that whole thing, is that you have all of this complexity. We know talking about the Supreme is always complicated. So not surprisingly, when you talk about the Sixth Circuit, you know, just the basics is this complicated. To see all the different things coming together, and you have to try to somehow realize that, a relationship with that. You have to try to wrap your personality around that whole fact, not just recognize it. You know, the word they use is realize. you have to, you know, have the breadth and depth and length to encompass all of that complexity before you can leave the Sixth Circuit even.
To be setting up existential, experiential, and related.
And something together, yeah. See, you notice that too, see? Yeah, so there's all kinds of things in play there. All right.
The inability of the Havana pilgrims fully to find God the Supreme is compensated by the seventh master spirit, whose triune nature in such a peculiar manner is revelatory of the spirit person of the Supreme. During the present universe age of the non-contactability of the person of the Supreme, Master Spirit number 7 functions in the place of the God of ascendant creatures in the manner of personal relationships. He is the one high spirit being that all ascenders are certain to recognize and somewhat comprehend when they reach the centers of glory.
So that adds to that whole bit about, you know, the Seventh Circuit. You know, each of them is finding their master spirit, you know, personally, and turning around and saying hi, you know, being birthed out of that spiritual womb. But all the ascenders have to come into relationship with the seventh, not just us. So there's that, interesting little tidbit. Now notice what they did before that. So the inability of the Havana pilgrims fully to find God the Supreme is compensated by the seventh master spirit. Okay. So start thinking about that. So you go, okay, the inability of the Havana pilgrims fully to find God the Supreme. Well, your first thought is, yeah, duh. I mean, I finally get all the way to paradise and I turn around and I go out as a finaliter. That's when I'm God the Supreme seeking, you know, and becoming a seventh stage spirit when I've found. So yeah, of course you know, I'm not going to fully find God the Supreme. I'm a long ways away from that. Okay, but I'm even a long ways away yet from finding the personal purposive. You know, fully to find God the Mother. I need to do that because I'm going to leave a finality. I'm going to be God the Mother revealing. So I have to have a full embodiment. Okay, you know, we're just talking about Havana pilgrims here still. To get to that fully in relationship to God the Mother, so you can be God the Mother revealing, a lot of that happens on paradise, you know, subsequent to Havana. They talk about that fact being sort of confirmed by this new resonance with the Eternal Mother Spirit that occurs there. Okay. So that's in play. And then they say, so seventh master spirit, whose triune nature is such a peculiar manner, is revelatory of the spirit person of the Supreme. Okay, so wait a minute, that sounded a lot like the spirit person of the Supreme. If you go back up the second paragraph of the number 7. Subsection here, they said that he discloses a personal and organic relationship to the spirit person of the evolving Supreme. Oh, the spirit person of the evolving supreme. Here they said the spirit person of the supreme. Okay. Well, the fact that it was evolving supreme, that's how we knew we were talking about the universal mother, not the supreme being. If you just say the spirit person of the supreme, okay, that's the supreme being. But it doesn't just say that. It says in such a peculiar manner, okay, like we, yeah, what's the peculiar manner? It's not directly the supreme being. It's the personal purposive down in the finite. It's the universal mother. That's the peculiar manner. So it's two different ways of saying the same thing here. One, you know, with the putting the evolving in there, the ing, so you know it's not evolved. Okay, the spirit person of the evolved supreme, that's the supreme being. The evolving, that's the universal mother. See, and then during the present universe age, the non-contact ability of the person of the supreme. Okay, notice there's no ing or peculiar. Okay, that's the supreme being. The supreme being is not contactable in this age. Because the supreme being is a transcendental being. It doesn't stand anywhere in the finite domain. Not in Avona or in the aisle or anything. Okay? You're never going to walk up to him and shake hands and say hi. He's not contactable in the finite age. It's a transcendental being. Okay? So, the seventh master spirit is making up for that by not, but not in a purely direct way of being a direct expression of the supreme being as a person, but really the downstepped expression of that personal purposiveness in the finite, the universal mother. Okay. all right, and then the last little bit here.
This master spirit is always in liaison with the reflective spirits of Uversa, the headquarters of the seventh superuniverse, our own segment of creation. His administration of Orvantan discloses the marvelous symmetry of the coordinate blending of the divine natures of Father, Son, and Spirit.
Okay, that last little bit, you know, so discloses the marvelous symmetry of the coordinate blending. Okay. If you want symmetry of soul, okay, what do you have to do? You've got to overcome the father bias. Oh, the last section is tied to the very first section we read tonight. It's about the father bias. We're initiated by the father. And that's wonderful. But in the act of initiating you, he biases you. And consecrating your will to the perfect will of God the Father is just strengthening that bias. In order to have symmetry of soul, you know, not have a soul that's all lopsided to the Father side, you need to consecrate your mind to the universal harmony of that coordinator, God the Mother. So, that just, you know, you can see when all is said and done, everything we've read tonight, that's the key revelation, that there's a twofold consecration. And that symmetry of soul is only achieved when you become like the seventh master spirit, when you can transcend the biases of the other six, for instance, or more specifically, like I'm saying in our case, you know, it's the father bias. And one of the main ways that that father bias expresses itself is we start to think about more important things, you know, than how to feed ourselves and keep from freezing to death. That father bias, that initiator bias, gives us an initial religious bias. We tend to view the universe in a biased way. We need a symmetric relationship to the threefold actuality. When you start with that religious consciousness that the Father initiates, or that Jesus, you know, gave a booster shot to in the fourth epical revelation, okay, if you start with that religious consciousness that you have from those two facts, the Father and the fourth epical revelation, when you think about the threefold actuality, you won't say science, philosophy, religion. Because you're in religion. You don't see it objectively to call it religion. You're inside of it. You know, from your religious consciousness perspective, you'll say science, philosophy, truth. And what am I referring to? That's up at the end of the book, in the last section of the book, when they're talking about the threefold actuality. And they're talking about how you have this initial bias from your religious consciousness. And it's really your father bias initiating you in that religious impulse to get going. But you have to challenge yourself to overcome that bias and get symmetric with the cosmos. There is truth in all, not just in the religious part of the threefold actuality. But initially it appears that that's where all the truth is. And then there's those two other things. You know, there's that science thing and that philosophy thing. And then there's truth. That's not a symmetric set of three words. You know what the symmetric set is: science, philosophy, religion. The way to begin to overcome that bias is by taking into light and cultivating a philosophic consciousness, because the philosophic consciousness is unbiased. Okay? Yeah, just in a simple sense, it's the superadditive consequence of a balanced relationship between the inner life and the outer life, between true science and true religion, and true philosophy. And that's what they bring out up there in the last section of the book, is going from that initial biased set of three words to a more symmetric set of three words, getting you into the fifth epical revelation. Getting you into the very first thing that they introduce in the revelation, the very beginning of the foreword. Very first bit of revelation is things, meanings, values. A balanced set of three words. And the foundational set. This is really not so much about the seven master spirits. It's about the ascension scheme, and it's about the essentialness of the mother in relationship to the ascension scheme. Yeah, and that's why the other six master spirits were kind of just a lot of yada, yada, yada in many ways. When you start to get into this, now you're starting to really see the fifth epical revelation, where you can't talk about the truth of the fifth epical revelation without talking about the mother. If you try to talk about the fifth epical revelation with just the father, there's going to be more distortion of meaning. Your perspective is going to be biased. You're going to have a religious bias. You're going to see the text as a religious text. It's not a religious text. It's a philosophic text. And in order to come into relationship with it, you have to take delight in cultivating that consecration of your mind to the universal harmony of God the Mother. That totality attitude on the inside. All right, let's take a moment here.